29 reads, some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, can't understand him at all. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that some look on the soul as amazing. Then he says, some amazing people look on the soul. And some people look on the soul, and that's amazing. So in these three ways, he looks at these statements. Some describe the soul as amazing. Some amazing people describe the soul. And some people describe the soul, and that's amazing. And of course, others, after hearing about the soul, they cannot understand him at all. So these few verses from 26 to 30, they're, of course, it's all related to the idea of the eternal soul, but particularly the point is coming up here, that if you think there is no soul, then still you should fight. And 30 is like a summary of this whole section from 11 to 30. Thank you. Anyone who's here who doesn't have a Bhagavad Gita? And who's awake? Who's not awake? Put up your hand. I think let's just see. We needed four. You need one, that's right. Someone else needs one? Oh well. There's a couple. Looks like we need two more.
Two more.
I think so, yeah. We needed four more yesterday. This is two, so.
Sorry,
okay. You may have heard, just as a minor diversion, that the presiding deity of sleep, some of you will have heard this, Nidra Devi, at the beginning of creation, she complained to Lord Vishnu that I do my duty, you know, very freely and nicely, but there's one problem. That is that I can't do my duty, putting people to sleep, with the Vaishnavas, with your devotees, because they're always awake, because they're hearing your glories, hearing and chanting about you. So Lord Vishnu thought and said, all right, I'll give you a benediction. That whenever my devotees are hearing, he said, actually, Srimad Bhagavatam, then you can work on it. I think it includes Bhagavad Gita also. So I think she's doing her duty quite well this morning. So try and stick with it. I mean, we could always turn on a fan if that would help. Or...
is this joke? Is this really stated in Shastra?
Yes, it's true. And you can see it. The realization is there. Anyway, so verse 30 just sums up this section from 11 to 30. The soul's eternal, can never be killed, so don't be so worried. Don't be in such great anxiety about killing. Then, from 31 to 38, Krishna talks about Krishna still encouraging Arjuna to fight, but from a different angle of vision altogether. Really, completely different. Now he's talking about the fact that you're a Kshatriya. And if you don't fight, the basic idea is, if you don't fight, people are going to think very badly of you, and you're going to feel very hurt. In fact, it'll be worse than death. It'll be terrible. Dishonor is worse than death. So, in 31, Krishna makes the point that for you to fight, Arjuna, is actually a religious duty. For the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, if they do their duty properly, even if it's not really for spiritual realization, but if they just do their duty properly, then there won't be any sinful reaction. Not only will there not be any sinful reaction, But simply by doing their duty properly, they'll be elevated to heaven. That is the Vedic system, as established by Krishna. Chaturvarnya Maya Shastra. So, Krishna's saying that it's the best thing for you to do, to fight. And 32, Krishna's saying that when a Kshatriya gets the opportunity to fight without looking for it, it just comes to him, then he's very happy. He feels himself extremely fortunate because the doors of heaven are being opened without him having to make any big effort. So it's the same basic idea. Just do your duty according to Varnashra and you'll automatically be elevated to the heavenly planets. However, the rest of this section, at least say 33 to 37, Krishna's discussing what will happen if you don't do your duty. Well, first of all, he says, you'll incur sin. This is the first point. If you don't act as a Kshatriya, even if you try and do some other duty very nicely, but because you're not acting as a Kshatriya, you'll incur sin. And then what to speak about your honor? People will speak of your infamy. And for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. So this is kind of, you know, to try and get Arjuna to fight on the basis of his pride and honor. These ideals are not as lofty as the ideals of the eternal spirit soul. You know, it's really coming down to the material platform very much. That if you don't fight, people are going to speak of you very badly, you'll lose your honor, your good name will be lost. Of course, a devotee isn't really worried about, was not meant to be worried about, his or her good name. But a Kshatriya at least who's on the material platform, he'll have a definite sense of honor, pride, like that. So Krishna is trying to sort of encourage Arjuna to fight on the basis of that sense of pride. The great generals, previously they all thought of you very highly, but they'll think that you left the battlefield out of fear. As we were saying, Arjuna, he expressed some feeling of compassion. He didn't want to kill the warriors on the other side. But Krishna's saying that a Kshatriya feels very fortunate if he gets into a fight without looking for it. They want to fight. They actually want to fight. So if they hear that, oh, Arjuna was feeling compassionate, he didn't want to hurt you, then it's not that the Kauravas would think that, oh, how nice of him. What a gentleman. No. They'd simply think, oh, he's just a coward. He's just a sissy. Because they are feeling very happy. We can fight now. How wonderful. We can achieve the heavenly kingdom. Or if we win, we'll achieve a kingdom on this planet. So actually they're looking forward to the fight. So either, in 37, Krishna's saying, either you'll be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, which means you win. You're winning in a sense. Or else you'll win in the battle and you'll win an earthly kingdom, which means you win. So it's like if you lose you win, and if you win you win. You can't miss. Whereas Arjuna was saying that if I win I lose, and if I lose then I lose. So Krishna is just turning the whole thing around. Arjuna was thinking that if I win, there's going to be no one to enjoy the kingdom with. So I don't want to win. But if I lose, then, you know, I'll probably be dead. Or I'll just lose. So if I lose, I lose. So if I win, I lose. And if I lose, I lose. But Krishna is saying that if you lose, you win.
And if you win, you win. So, how can you go wrong? Then in verse 38, Krishna makes an interesting statement. Tomorrow we're going to go into the subject of the yoga ladder. In fact, tonight we want you to read the yoga ladder, the description of the yoga ladder, which is page 55. So there are different stages in the yoga ladder, and one of them is called Sakam Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means you do your duty according to the nature of your body and your psychology. You do it, but in a detached spirit. As we mentioned, that detachment is like the fundamental principle of yoga. So you do your duty, but in a detached spirit. So it's not just karma, it's karma yoga. But you're still attached. You're still attached materially. So it's sakam, kam, K-A-M-A. Sakam karma yoga. Kam, K-A-M-A, means material desire. And sa means with. You do your duty for spiritual elevation. So it's karma yoga, not just karma. But you still have material desire. You're still attached to the activity itself. As opposed to nishkam karma yoga, where you do your duty for elevation in a detached spirit, but you have no attachment whatsoever. So here Krishna says, fight for the sake of fighting. So you fight with attachment to the fighting. So it's sakam. It's with material attachment. But you try and cultivate, try not to consider happiness, distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. Try and cultivate this higher attitude. But of course, just because you're just beginning this process now, you're still attached, so fight for the sake of fighting. It comes naturally to you. But try and cultivate this mood of detachment. Sakam Karma Yoga. Sakam Karma Yoga. S-A-K-A-M-A. Kam means desire or lust. So it's Sakam Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga, doing your duty according to your physical and psychological nature, for elevation, trying to cultivate detachment, but you are still attached. You're not completely free of attachment. So in the case of a kshatriya, he would fight, as Krishna say, fight for the sake of fighting. Whereas in nishkam karma yoga, then he fights, but he's not fighting for the sake of fighting. He's fighting simply on the principle of duty. If he had another duty, he'd do that. But on the level of sakam, he's fighting because he likes fighting. But he's trying to cultivate detachment at the same time. It's coming from the acharyas. Yeah. And if you read page 55, and I think it goes over to page 56, what we've asked you to read tonight, the yoga ladder, it describes these things very clearly. So now starting with verse 39, it's the fourth section, verse 39 to 53. It's a description mainly of nishkam karma yoga. Doing your duty, in the case of Arjuna that means fighting, for spiritual elevation, but free from attachment. It's also called Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga, it's a term, you'll see if you go through all these verses from 39 onwards, you'll see that Krishna uses the term Buddhi Yoga again and again to describe the particular process he's going to describe here. Buddhi, of course, means intelligence. Buddhi yoga, it's sort of like, more like an umbrella term. because it particularly refers to Nishkam Karma Yoga, but it also applies to, can be applied to Bhakti Yoga. Any of you know a very famous verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna refers to what is definitely pure devotional service as Buddhi Yoga? Very good, yeah. Chapter 10, verse 10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Priti means love, or at least very strong affection, somewhere between bhava and prema, or even prema as such. Dadami buddhi yogantam. So, of course, it's a fact, and we'll discuss it when we get to that point, that what is really buddhi yoga doesn't completely include at least the higher levels of bhakti yoga. But still the term is used sort of as like an umbrella term to describe karma yoga and bhakti yoga at least up to a certain point. So, Nishkam karma yoga then, or buddhi yoga. So in verse 39, Krishna sets the scene by saying that I've given you spiritual knowledge, jnana, now. And I've encouraged the idea of fighting on the basis of the knowledge. But it's not that that knowledge would automatically encourage you to fight. It's not that that knowledge of the soul, if Krishna just gave Arjuna knowledge of the soul, and there was no reference to fighting in some completely different scenario altogether. It's not that after Arjuna heard all this knowledge about the soul in that setting, that Arjuna would then think that, oh yes, I might as well go and fight and kill people. No. It was just that that knowledge of the soul was being sort of dovetailed to justify that, you know, at least there's nothing wrong with killing in this situation. But it's not that that killing would, or that fighting would naturally follow as like a function of that knowledge. But this Buddhi yoga means it's the same knowledge of the soul, but it includes that you must act. It includes that you must act. So therefore it naturally follows in the context of karma yoga or buddhi yoga. It naturally follows that Arjuna would conclude that, oh yes, so I must fight. So this buddhi yoga or nishkam karma yoga, it's like a combination of jnana, knowledge of the soul, and duty. That's really what it is. It's not just duty. In 31 to 38, Krishna discusses duty. Just because you're a kshatriya, fight. And of course from 11 to 30, it's all knowledge of the soul. But this is a combination of the two. Your duty according to your material nature, so that means karma, but then the spiritual knowledge, so it's not just karma, but it's karma yoga. And you should try and do it without any personal desire, detached, then it's nishkam karma yoga. I hope this doesn't sound too complicated. I know it's slightly complicated, I don't think it's too complicated really. But these first chapters are a little bit like that. It's a little complicated, the intricacies of karma, jnana, and then later on ashtanga and meditation. It's a little complicated. So anyway, this is the idea of nishkam karma yoga or buddhi yoga. Do your duty in spiritual knowledge, in a mood of detachment. And we'll see later on, Krishna stresses that you have to do your duty. If you don't do your duty, then your body and mind, if you're not free from their influence, your body and mind are going to force you to act. So you may try to simply be a jnani. Just sit there and meditate or be fixed in your knowledge. But if you don't engage your body and your mind, according in whatever way comes naturally to them, if you don't do that, you're going to find yourself being forced to act. And so you'll lose your detached position, your philosophical position, like that. So being able to act means that your body and your mind feel comfortable. You're acting, letting your body and mind act as they want. In Arjuna's case, being a kshatriya is just what comes naturally to him. But you're doing it in a spiritual context. So in the end, you get liberation. So it's a very nice process. And in verse 40, probably you all know verse 40, Krishna glorifies this process. It's such a nice process. There's no loss, no diminution. Even if you just make a little advancement, you get saved from the mahatobayat, the greatest type of fear. Such a nice process. Very easy to perform, but it's very pure and spiritual. Verse 41, of course, is also a very important verse. It describes the essential characteristic that a person must have if they're going to really make a success in yoga. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. So if you want to be successful in yoga, you have to be like this. Or else, Krishna says, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. You have to be fixed in yoga. Probably you know that when Prabhupada read this verse and the commentary by Vishnath Chakravarti Thakura, Prabhupada's own words were that he felt very struck by it, particularly by the commentary of Vishnath Chakravarti Thakura. Very struck. And it had quite a deep influence in his life, actually, from that point on. I don't know if you've been through our overview completely yet, but we're very fortunate that on the very last page there are some quotations from that commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. So I'll just read that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says, "The best kind of intelligence I can have is intelligence used in the service of Krishna. That intelligence is defined as fixed. Intelligence is fixed when it is intent upon my spiritual master's instructions, such as chanting the names of Krishna, remembering his activities, and performing service to his lotus feet. His instructions are my sadhana and my life, both in the beginning stages of bhakti as well as in bhakti's perfectional stage. I desire only to follow his instructions. I accept nothing else as my life's work, even in dreams. Whether I'm happy or distressed, whether the material world remains or is destroyed, I do not care. There's no loss for me. I simply must carry out the orders of my spiritual master. Fixedness upon his orders is determined intelligence in devotional service." So he's defining what is determined intelligence in devotional service. It means to be fixed on the orders of the spiritual master. And only by being fixed in his orders is such determined intelligence possible. So that's directly translated from Vishnath Chakravarti Thakura's commentary. And this is what Srila Prabhupada said struck him very deeply. So the same thing applies in Karma Yoga, and it also applies in Bhakti Yoga. So it's very relevant to us. So we'll carry on from here tomorrow. Any comment or question, Mataji? Sorry? Jnana, yes, knowledge. Well, Jnana Yoga really is a practice which is based on that knowledge. Jnana Yoga traditionally means to realize the nature of the soul or Brahman. So These are like the fundamental principles of the knowledge on which the practices of Jnana Yoga are based. Jnana Yoga generally means mental speculation on these types of subjects. What is the soul? How is the soul different from the body? Like that. He hasn't talked of any practice. It's just the knowledge as such which he's been giving. So it's not Jnana Yoga as such, but it's just that Jnana of the knowledge of the soul.
Come on. You mentioned that if one simply performs a prescribed duty,
yeah,
just by that force you would be in
heaven. That's what Krishna says, yeah. Yeah. If they actually perform their, what is really their prescribed duty according to Varnara and Ashram, then they can be elevated to heaven. That's the whole idea of, I mean, that's one important idea in Vedic society. Because that duty will also involve different religious practices also. That's what Krishna has been saying. One last point.
Just to give a sense of what you,
yeah.
What's the breakdown of the understanding?
Do you know what? No. No, I don't know. Ask Sachin Narayan.
We'll get a short.
Sorry?
I have a very short question.
All right.
That means, I don't know, could you... I don't know if I correctly understand. This section from 31 to 38 is Karma Kanda.
Right.
Sakama Karma Yoga is only one verse, 38.
Yeah.
And next is description Nishkama.
Nishkama Karma Yoga, yeah. That's the basic idea, yeah. So tonight, please, I hope you read through chapter 2 last night or yesterday. If you didn't, please do. Because from now on, it's a little subtle. From here to the end of the chapter, it's definitely a little bit complicated. Not too complicated, but a bit. So it would help if you were just a little conversant with it for tomorrow. And then do read about the yoga ladder in your overview book, page 55 and 56. Srila Prabhupada ki.